Mantra, Sacred Words of Power, Session 6, The Avatar Mantras, Part 2.
Now you remember that Purusharama, who had been on his way to slay the last demon king, had heard about this contest, and out of interest, had decided to go observe it. And he was nearly upon the scene when he heard the loud crack. And intuitively, in a place of agony inside, he had a thought of what it might be. Hurrying his pace, he arrived at the scene and saw the bow split in two, useless on the ground. He also saw a young, handsome man and a smaller man standing beside him, and he bristled as he approached the two men. "Who has cracked Shiva's bow?" he demanded. Lakshmana, being full of mischief even while divine, says, "Old man, what do you care? You would not be able to marry such a beautiful princess anyway, so it is of no consequence to you. Keep silent." Purusharama, completely unused to being addressed in this way, trembling with his finger on the handle of his axe, says, "Young man, be careful how you speak, lest those words be your last." Whereupon Rama moves forward with joined palms, addresses Purusharama, and says, "O ancient and most honored one, please excuse my younger brother. He has an arrogant tongue and does not know how to leash it properly." Well, Purusharama was calmed at these words, but Lakshmana could not be contained and said, "I do not fear you. So what if you try to kill me? You're so old and decrepit that if you lift your axe, the weight of it itself might cut off your own head. Then I would have the reputation of having killed one such as you. I could not stand such awful fame." That was it. Purusharama could brook no more. And he lifted his axe and began the rotation of his shoulders that would bring it surely and swiftly down. But again, Rama intervened and said, "O most kind and generous Purusharama, please excuse my younger brother. When parted from you, he speaks nothing but words of praise. Yet, as I said, he is bridled with such an insulting tongue that he cannot help himself. Kindly have mercy upon him." Trembling, Purusharama lowers his axe and says, "You speak well, young sir. By your words, I shall spare his life. Who are you?" Whereupon Rama joins his palms again and says, "I am your replacement, Purusharama. I am the next avatar who has come." Purusharama replies, "I have been told that when my replacement comes, only he will be able to pluck an arrow and shoot it from the bow of Vishnu, which I have sitting upon my shoulder. If what you say be true, I will now give you that bow, and let us see if you can let fly an arrow from it." Purusharama started to reach for the bow, but it leapt off of his shoulder and into the hands of Rama. Whereupon Rama took an arrow from his quiver and shot it off into the distance with speed, strength, and great ease. At that moment, a ball of light came out of the chest of Purusharama and entered into the chest of Rama, and the transfer of power and authority was complete. Instantly, Purusharama knew what had happened. He realized that Rama had spoken the truth, that Rama was his divine replacement. And with great relief, he joined his palms and said, "Now that my replacement has come, I may leave off my task of separating heads from their bodies and may go quietly into the forest and meditate for the rest of my days. Salutations and goodbye." And with that, he went into the forest and made good his promise and sat quietly in meditation, experiencing great joy and reuniting his consciousness with the divine, Narayana. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So now the seventh avatar of Vishnu has been fully invested with the power. He and Sita become married according to the ceremonial standards that are accorded such a one, a king and a princess. Then all of the court intrigue that I spoke about earlier took place, and Rama, Sita, and Lakshmana are banished to the forest. So now we rejoin Sita, Rama, and Lakshmana as they journey into the forest. And because the avatar of Vishnu is wandering through the forest, all of nature responds to the divine authority of Rama and the divine purity of Sita. And as it is written in the epochs that record the life of Sita and Rama, the Ramayana, by the great poets Valmiki and Tulasidas, all of nature responded. The birds began to sing more beautiful songs. The trees began to produce more luscious fruit than ever. And the taste of the water became sweeter, even though it was the same water. As they wandered through the forest, they came closer to the place that Parashurama had been off to, the kingdom of Ravana. Now, gossip travels very fast, and Ravana had heard that Rama and his family had been banished from the kingdom into the forest, and so he set out of curiosity to spy upon them. When he finally catches up with them, hiding behind a tree, Rama and Lakshmana become distracted by a deer, and they decide to go in search of the deer and leave Sita resting under a tree. This is the only opportunity that Ravana needs. He kidnaps Sita and immediately takes flight to his kingdom in the south. When Rama and Lakshmana return, they look everywhere and realize that Sita is nowhere to be found. Now Sita is the very divine energy of Rama. Remember how we talked about that consciousness is masculine and the power of consciousness is feminine. Brahma had his Saraswati. The fire has its power to burn. And Rama has Sita, the divine energy itself. So Sita, as the divine energy of Rama, is destined to be with Rama. Any separation can only be temporary, because in fact, they are one being. You cannot separate fire and its power to burn, and you really cannot separate Rama from his power, Sita. While they are searching for Sita, they come across a group of monkeys, and one they befriend who seems to be a bit of an outcast from his own group of monkeys. He immediately falls at the feet of Lord Rama and proclaims himself your foremost servant, because he recognizes the divinity in Rama. Rama, in turn, recognizes him and invests in him the power of his foremost servant, and said, your first task is to go in search of Sita and find out where she has been taken. So saying, the monkey called Hanuman, the foremost servant of Rama, takes flight, speedily going through the trees as if he were flying, and finds the place where Sita is held captive by Ravana. Meanwhile, Rama and Lakshmana are journeying through the forest, carrying out the other purpose for their banishment, and that is meeting various saints and sages and celestials who have taken up abode here, and blessing them so that they may achieve the goal of liberation. At one point, Rama spies a rock laying flat upon the ground, and he purposely goes up to it and trods upon it. And immediately it springs into a woman who bows at his feet. And she says, oh, thank you, Lord Rama. 1,000 years ago, I was cursed to take the form of this rock, and I was told that an avatar of Vishnu would trod upon me and bring me back to life. And now here you are. Thank you and salutations again and again. He immediately blessed her with devotion and liberation, and he went on his way. Now, as we said earlier, gossip moves very quickly, and the news of Rama's turning a rock into a woman spreads everywhere. In due course the next day, Rama comes to a river which must be crossed, and the only way to cross it is with a ferry boat run by a boatman by the name of Guha. Now, as Rama and Lakshmana approach, Guha is in a quandary. He's heard the story of the rock. And so he's thinking in his mind, how can he approach the impending situation? So, Rama and Lakshmana approach. Rama says, "Kind sir, would you please take us across this river?" And Guha says, "I know who you are, Lord Rama. I have heard that the dust of your feet can transform a rock into a woman. I have this boat as my only means of subsistence. What if your feet should turn this boat into something else? Then I will have no means of subsistence for my family." Now Rama was very much pleased at this devotion of Guha, and he understood that Guha not only knew who he was, but the great power emanating from the chakras in the feet. All of the great masters and avatars have huge chakras in their feet that pour forth an enormous charge of spiritual energy. This accounts for the tradition that you will see in the East, where students will bow down and touch the feet of their teachers. Because even today, some teachers have those chakras in the feet open, and there is great spiritual energy that pours forth from those feet. So Rama knows that Guha is aware of the chakras in his feet. Rama inquires, "O boatman, with such divine perception, what is your name?" The boatman replies, "My name is Guha, O Rama, and I would request to wash your lotus feet so that the dust from them that has transformed a rock into a woman will not transform my boat into something else. If I wash your feet, surely you may enter my boat safely." Rama, very much pleased at the devotion of Guha, allows his feet to be washed, and the tremendous spiritual energy pouring forth bathes Guha in divine light and divine energy. Rama and Lakshmana then get in Guha's boat, and he takes them safely across to the other side. Whereupon Rama says, "Guha, you have taken me across this river. Now what are your charges?" And Guha responds, "By your grace, I have taken you across this river. You kindly take me across this ocean of rebirth, so that I no longer have to be born, so that I have mukti, liberation, from being reborn again and again." Rama, very much pleased at the devotion of Guha, says, "I will liberate you here and now, on the spot. I am so pleased that I ask you, request some favor, some boon, anything at all you want, and I will grant it." Guha says, "Having mukti and liberation from you, I have everything." "Nonetheless," says Rama, "ask for something." And after thinking a moment, and Guha says, "Here is my request. I request from you that the name of Rama itself be superior to all other vibrations in removing that karma which may bind us to the earth plane, so that by saying your name itself, Rama, 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 we reduce our karma every time we say it and move closer to liberation or mukti." "So be it," said Rama, and went on his journey. And from that day forward, any mantra that has the name of Rama in it is very powerful in moving us towards liberation. In fact, there is a mantra that is known as the Taraka mantra. Taraka means that which takes one across. And that mantra is, Om Shri Rama Jai Rama Jaya Jaya Rama. Om Shri Rama Jai Rama Jaya Jaya Rama. Om Shri Rama Jai Rama Jaya Jaya Rama. Om, we know. Shri is a word which means the feminine power of Sita, Shri. Rama, you know, the name of the seventh avatar of Vishnu. Om Shri Rama, Jaya Rama. Jaya means victory. So the mantra means, O divine Rama with your power, victory, victory again to Rama. Om Shri Rama, Jaya Rama, Jaya Jaya Rama. It means victory to the divine self in each and every one of us. Victory in overcoming our karma. Victory in being liberated so that we no longer must be reborn on planet Earth and can move on to our next set of lessons as an evolving soul in the next place, whatever that may be. Om Shri Rama Jai Rama Jai Jai Rama. Now, while Rama and Lakshmana go on their journey of Sita, I will tell you that in modern time, this mantra was practiced by the great Indian Mahatma Gandhi. Now, Mahatma Gandhi, when he was a young child, was initiated into this mantra, as it were, by his nurse. His nurse would sit with him and chant this mantra again and again, and it agreed with young Gandhi, so that all of his life he chanted, Om Shri Rama Jai Rama Jai Jai Rama, Om Shri Rama Jai Rama Jai Jai Rama. And it's interesting to note that although this is a mantra to bring liberation, Gandhi used it to achieve transformation of worldly affairs on a grand scale. He liberated India from the rule of the British, and all the while, turning around in his heart, was the beloved mantra of Rama, Om Shri Rama Jai Rama Jai Jai Rama. And even at the moment of his death, there is a spiritual law called the Law of the Last Thought, which says, the last thought at the time of death will strongly influence where you are born in your next life and under what conditions. So all of his life, Gandhi knew that he was preparing for the moment of death when he would chant the name of Rama. And so we even have recorded on film, because we have that moment captured on film, that at the moment of his death, he is chanting, Hey Ram, Hey Ram, even as life is passing from him. So great is the power of this mantra, then, that I would encourage you, if you have worldly or governmental affairs that you were involved in, or if you want to use it for administrative affairs or business affairs to make things operate properly, correctly, and with a noble spirit, the mantra has great power for transforming all of these activities. Om Shri Rama Jai Rama Jai Jai Rama. So you see that this mantra for liberation can be used with great effect in solving problems related to the world, as well as problems in eliminating the necessity for rebirth. Because of the blessing given to Guha, the name of Rama has great power in eliminating our karma. In spiritual physiology, it is said that there are a masculine and a feminine current in the body, and that Ra goes down the right side and Ma goes down the left side. And that by clearing these currents, these channels of karmic debris, we can evolve very quickly. And so the simple mantra to reduce the debris in these channels is the name of Rama. Rama, 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 Rama. Hey, Rama, 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 Rama. Shri Rama, 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 Rama. Hey, Rama, 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 Rama. That mantra is very powerful in balancing the masculine and feminine currents within, clearing them of karmic debris, and speeding our evolution. There's another story connected with the name of Rama. It will change even the most negative nature, and even if you pronounce it incorrectly, let me demonstrate by this story. There was a murderer. He was a robber who used to hide in the forest, catch people unawares, take their possessions, and kill them. And one day, there was a sage who was devoted to Rama, who was traveling through the forest. And this murderer tried to waylay the sage. But the sage said, Why are you trying to do this to me? The sage caught him. But the sage stopped him with an upraised hand and the power emanating therefrom, and said, Why are you attempting to do this? Why do you wish to rob me and then take off my head? And the murderer said, This is the only thing I know how to do. This is the only way I can take care of myself. And the sage said, I can help you. I have a mantra that will bring peace to your mind, and give you new ways to earn your living. And that mantra is Rama, 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 Rama. So great was the avatar Rama who walked among us that his name has power. Interested, the murderer tried to say the name of Rama, but his tongue was so evil he could not even form the syllables. So finally the sage, being a clever fellow himself, said, "Then say it backwards. Say Mara, Mara, Mara." And so the murderer and thief said, "Let me try. Mara, 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 Mara." And as you can hear, after time, it became Rama, 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 He, Rama, 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 Rama. And he immediately went into meditation, and a huge anthill came to grow around him from the activities of ants in the nearby area. And years later, the sage returned, and he saw this huge anthill, and he said, "Where is my disciple that I gave the mantra Rama?" And from inside the anthill, he heard, And so the sage took his trident and carved open a small opening, and the man emerged with a new name, Valmiki, which means one who has emerged from an anthill. And Valmiki went on to write the great epic saga Ramayana, the story of the life of the seventh avatar of Vishnu, Sri Rama. So you can see that the power of this mantra is so strong that it can turn the karma of a murderer and a robber into the karma of a saint. One word, Rama, Rama, Rama. After leaving Guha, Rama and Lakshmana continued their journey through the forest. Meanwhile, Hanuman, traveling at light speed through the trees, has arrived at the castle of Ravana the demon, and he has found where Sita is hiding. Now, he doesn't have enough power to defeat Ravana and free Sita, but he can return and tell Rama where Sita is hidden, and with all speed he does so. They adopt a straight line flight for Ravana's castle, and a huge battle ensues, and Hanuman is fighting all the attendants of Ravana, and Rama and Ravana are fighting. Finally, at the end, Rama is about to cut off Ravana's head, when Ravana, his demoniac nature clouding his wisdom, the veils part for 1 second, and he sees Rama for who he is. And he says, "O Rama, even though I am born in a demon body, still, I am your devotee. Om Shri Rama, Sharanam Mama. Om Shri Rama, Sharanam Mama. Om Shri Rama, Sharanam Mama. Om Shri Rama, Sharanam Mama." Which means, "In Rama, I take my refuge." Whereupon, Rama blesses him with return to the abode of Narayana, from whence he had been outcast, and immediately cuts off his head. Thus ends the second incarnation in demonic form by Jaya and Vijaya from long ago, when they were cursed by those sages and altered by Narayana. They will take their third and final incarnation when the avatar Krishna arrives. But with the concluding of the story of Rama, we are left with a fertile field of mantras that are efficacious in solving worldly and spiritual problems. Those mantras are Om Shri Rama Jai Rama Jai Jai Rama, and its short form Rama 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 Rama. And the final mantra Om Shri Rama Sharanam Mama, which means I take shelter in the name of Rama. Sometimes we are in life situations where we're not quite sure how to proceed. We know we need help of some sort. We're not quite sure what that help should be or how things should work out, in spite of our sincerity. And this mantra, Om Shri Rama Sharanam Mama, is efficacious for invoking that kind of divine help which may be non-specific, but which we need. And that's why we say we take refuge, and Rama, send us the help we need. Om Shri Rama Sharanam Mama. Om Shri Rama Sharanam Mama. Send the help, even though I may not know in what form it is best for me. Om Shri Rama Sharanam Mama. Finally, there are two mantras that pertain to Hanuman that energize the prana. These can be used for those, for instance, who are engaged in athletic competitions. As the prana grows stronger, the muscles will grow stronger and the limbs more flexible, and we're able to call upon more energy. These mantras are Om Hum Hanumate Vijayam. Om Hum Hanumate Vijayam. Om Hum Hanumate Vijayam. Om, you know, the seed sound for the brow center. We've talked about it several times. Hum, you'll recall, the seed sound for the throat center. Hanuman, the energy of the prana. And Vijayam, which means victory. We encountered Jaya Jaya, and Vijayam is another form of that word, which means victory. So the meaning of the mantra is victory to the prana on its evolutionary course within the body. Victory to the prana. Om Hum Hanumate Vijayam. The word hum in this mantra is efficacious in removing blocks near the throat. The two places in the spiritual physiology that we all have where energy tends to become blocked is near the base of the spine, near the genital center, and near the throat center. And this particular mantra helps open the throat center and blockages related to that. The other mantra will help with blockages which may exist at the base of the spine because it brings the prana to that place by saying Shri Hanumate. Those two words together help relieve blockages that may occur at the genital center. The full mantra is Om Shri Hanumate Namaha. Om Shri Hanumate Namaha. Which at the surface level means salutations to the conscious prana, which has been infused with the divine feminine energy. Om Shri Hanumate Namaha. So with the drama of Rama and his incarnation with Sita, Lakshmana, and Bharata, the second of the incarnations of Jaya and Vijaya in their demonic forms comes to a close. The next one will happen as we take up the eighth avatar of Vishnu, Krishna, where they are born as the demon Kamsa and his brother. And after this incarnation, Jaya and Vijaya may return once again to the abode of Narayana, the curse having been concluded. Of all the avatars, Krishna is reputed to be the most full incarnation of divine power from Narayana. Ironically, I'm going to spend the least time talking about Krishna. Here are the three things that he did in his incarnation, which was a huge drama just like the life of Rama. Number one, there were 16,000 sages that were very close to liberation. And the power of Krishna's incarnation was such that he had the authority to liberate these very high beings. The second thing that Krishna provides for us is a slender volume of teachings called the Bhagavad Gita. It is a series of lessons on the different ways to achieve liberation. And the Bhagavad Gita has become one of the most widely read spiritual scriptures in the world. And the third thing he has done is leave us with a series of mantras that will do one of two things. Bring us to a union with divine love and reduce our karma. First, mantras to bring us into ecstatic union with the idea, the principle of divine love. Om Shri Krishnaya Namaha. Om Shri Krishnaya Namaha. Om Shri Krishnaya Namaha. You'll remember Om is the seed sound of the brow center. Shri represents the feminine power. Krishna is the being and Namaha is I salute. So you are asking to become embraced by divine love in the form of Krishna. The other mantra that will produce that effect uses the seed sound Kleem that we discussed earlier. Remember the seed sound of attraction? Kleem. So the mantra is Om Kleem Krishnaya Namaha. Om Kleem Krishnaya Namaha. Om Kleem Krishnaya Namaha. That says, I am attracting to myself the principle of divine love in the form of Krishna. There is one final mantra associated with Krishna that we should discuss, and that is a mantra called the Maha Mantra, because it very powerfully reduces negative effects in this age of winter, spiritual darkness. Many of you have heard the mantra, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Rama Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. The meaning of the mantra primarily uses the names of the avatars of Rama and Krishna. It also has a word Hare in there, which means I hail or salutations. So essentially you're saying, hail to Rama, hail to Krishna, hail to Rama, hail to Krishna, over and over and over again. There are organizations that chant this mantra hours and hours and hours. And they prefer to sing the mantra rather than say it, and so I shall also sing it. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And you can sing that over and over and over again for a long time. And I can tell you from experience, if you do it for a while, it will make you feel wonderful. Of all the avatars of Vishnu, the ninth, the Buddha, is by far the most controversial. And to understand why, it's useful to look at the socio-political religious conditions of the time. First of all, the Brahmin priests were selling indulgences similar to what the Catholics did in the Middle Ages. If you wanted to buy a ceremony to make it rain in your neighbor's crops, there was a price for that. If you wanted your neighbor's cows to become your cows, there was a price for that. And they were withholding mantras from the people so that the people would have to pay them to perform the ceremonies. And they scared people so that they would continue to use the priests. If you don't use us, terrible things would happen. Another aspect of the time was that some of the mantras that weren't being given to the people were leaking out to non-religious people on the outside who were using them for strictly material and worldly means. So that on the one hand, the mantras are being withheld from the people. On the other hand, they're being given to, say, the merchant class, who was using them strictly as a powerful way to increase their business. With this tableau, we have the Buddha, who appeared around 563 BC and started teaching as close as we can determine sometime around 540. Born a Hindu, the Buddha's personal name was Siddhartha. And his family name was Gautama. So he was known as the Hindu Siddhartha Gautama. And he was born into a very wealthy family that shielded and protected him from the outside world, so that he had no understanding of such things as sickness and old age. Well, one day he slipped out, and he encountered these things. He saw people begging on the streets. He saw people dying of hunger and various diseases, and he saw old people, which he'd never seen before. And he was so overcome that he left the palace, renounced his life, and went out to find the higher truths. Eventually he became the Tathagata, which means one who has the truth. Buddha means the enlightened one, and Buddha is really a state of consciousness and not a title. And Gautama Siddhartha is generally recognized as the Buddha. Now, he tried several things. There were various paths of austerities from the Hindu tradition that he attempted, and they didn't work for him. He tried fasting. He tried bodily postures. He tried these routes, and they were unsuccessful. And finally, he he sat under a tree, the Bodhi tree, and he sat there for 43 days. Not unlike Christ in the wilderness, he was tempted. And he was tempted by a female figure called Mara. Mara. She offered him all manner of magical goods and a worldly title, and he turned them all down and eventually became the enlightened one, the Tathagata. Now, once he had achieved a state of enlightenment, he returned to the world, and he realized that the state of religion was, frankly, a terrible mess. So when he began to teach, he went after the abuses of the priest class in the following way. He said, "Let's not talk about the soul. We'll only speak about where you are right now. And for most of you, that's not a very good place. You're suffering in some way." And then, taking the doctrine of karma that was common to Hinduism, he said, "Because we know that karma results from actions in a previous life leading to rebirth in this life, we have to take ultimate responsibility for where we are. We have a history of depending upon Rama and Krishna and the great ones, and that's fine. But sooner or later, since they all teach that we are divine, sooner or later we have to take responsibility for that divinity, and we have to take responsibility for where we are right now." So he started with the four noble truths. First, existence as we know it is suffering. Second, our misery is rooted in ignorant craving, desire for things that really won't help us out spiritually. Third, that this misery can be abolished by eliminating ignorant craving. And to do this, you follow something called the Eightfold Path. As he began to teach enlightened self-interest through right living, the effect upon the Brahmin priest class was dramatic. It reduced in numbers, and many of the mantras stopped leaking to the outside world. So that 100 years later, the science of mantra had lost most of its appeal for the non-religious, the secrets had stopped leaking to the outside, and those who wanted power sought it through politics and government rather than through mantra. So from this standpoint, the job of the Buddha was masterfully completed. He brought a divine psychology based upon taking responsibility for where we are, and he reduced the problems with the priest class by thinning their numbers as more and more people became converted to Buddhism. One of the great mantras of Buddhism is that which prepares the mind to receive enlightenment. It's the Gate mantra, and I'll chant it for you right now. Gate, Gate, Paragate, Parasamgate, Bodhisvaha. Often it's said in one breath and then said again like this. Gate, Gate, Paragate, Parasamgate, Bodhisvaha. The meaning is gone, gone beyond, gone beyond, even beyond. Hail the goer. Bodhi, citta, means the spiritual mind stuff. And bodhi is that state where enlightenment of the mind stuff can be received. So the object is to achieve a state of bodhicitta. Gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisvaha. There are many more mantras for Buddhism, but most of them exist in Tibetan Buddhism, and we'll talk about that in a separate session a bit later. The 10th avatar of Vishnu is yet to come. In Hinduism, he's called Kalki, the coming one. It's interesting that at least 3 of the world's religions, probably more, have a myth about the one who comes. In Buddhism, it is the Maitreya, the one who is coming. In Judaism, they're waiting for the Messiah. In Christianity, they're waiting for the Messiah to come again. And in Hinduism, they're waiting for the 10th avatar, Kalki, the coming one. It is said that Kalki will come on a horse with a sword, and that sword will destroy the evil once again on earth and harvest the souls waiting for liberation that will then move into the next age of spiritual summer again, when 90% of the inhabitants of the planet are enlightened. There is no single mantra associated with Kalki, so we'll just have to wait and see how he manifests and what he teaches. So far we've discussed the 10 avatars of Vishnu, but we should understand that any teacher that comes and teaches us something about spirituality or how to solve worldly as well as material problems in a spiritual way contains the energy of Vishnu. Because that principle comes in all the spiritual teachers, in all the religions and all the paths. You know, we come with so many different cultures and climes and state of mind that the truth has to come in many different forms so that we can grasp it in the diversity of our way. But wherever roots to solving spiritual and material problems are taught on a path of nobility leading to liberation, there you will find the principle of Vishnu, the great saving principle of the universe.